Welcome to the Mad Tech Podcast from ExchangeWire, bringing you the latest news and views from the world of ad tech, media, and marketing.
Hello and welcome to the Mad Tech Podcast. I'm Amy Newell-Tarrion, editor at ExchangeWire, and we're here today with John Still, our head of content. How are you, John?
Doing well, thank you. Yeah, nicely caffeinated and looking forward to the chat.
Good, good. And I'm delighted to welcome our guest for today's episode, Shuda Sinclair, CSO at TMP.
Hi, thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, it's great to have you. How are you doing?
Very well. I've had a lot of chocolate this morning.
Good.
So slightly buzzing, in a good way.
Yeah. Tis the season, Shuda. Welcome.
Yeah, coffee and chocolate, perfect.
Ideal December combination, yeah.
All the food groups.
Today we'll be looking at the latest surrounding Meta's scam ads, AI sending traffic soaring for retailers, and older audiences flocking to influencer content. So to start with, looking at Meta. A group of Swedish publishers has filed a police complaint against Meta's CEO Mark Zuckerberg, accusing Facebook of profiting from fraudulent ads. The complaint alleges that Meta is guilty of fraud, complicity in fraud, and preparation for fraud. The group said that these fraudulent ads exploit media companies and journalists, causing both financial and psychological harm to innocent people. So, Shuda, I'll come to you first. What do you expect to come from this complaint?
Well, I highly doubt that Mark Zuckerberg is going to be extradited to Sweden. However, what is clear is that publishers through this lawsuit have really upped the ante, moving from what has been a history of civil cases to a criminal one. So get the popcorn. And what is clear is the highest, that the biggest risk for Zuckerberg is his reputation. The attention it's getting is linking the word fraud with Zuckerberg across many countries. And that's the real danger.
Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah. Bob, what do you think, John?
I'm going to tread lightly here because I feel like I'm at my network. I'm mad as hell and not going to take any more moment with Meta. I think it's been boiling on the podcast for a while. So I'm going to tread lightly and say that I don't massively expect huge things to come from the legal case itself. I think it's very much going to be reputational. And there's more and more stuff being found here about the level of fraudulent ads. There's been some news reports recently, and there's been some, I want to shout out to the Press Gazette because they've done some really good reporting on this. And this story from Sweden is the kind of tip of the iceberg. But I was looking into the case, and like, it's not just that there is fraudulent advertising on the site. It's that it accounts for about 10% of their revenue. It's an amazing amount. It's, you know, 790 million on fraudulent advertising in the UK alone. Never mind globally, which is closer to 16 billion. It is an incredible amount of money being made off it. And knowingly, there's reports on Reuters saying that, you know, they've seen the internal documents and like Meta know this is happening.
Oh, not only do they know it's happening, they're charging a premium.
And that's it. I found it. So this is insane.
It's actually more profitable for Meta if you run a suspicious piece of advertising versus a more compliant.
So their automated system will flag if a piece is potentially fraudulent. And if it thinks it is more than 95% likely to be fraudulent, they will ban it. Anything less than 95% likely to be fraudulent, and they just charge more money to run it on their platform. It sends me sideways that this is allowed to happen. And I will, I might end up in Sweden with a placard outside a courtroom asking for extradition.
Yeah, wouldn't blame you.
They're not, the publishers in Sweden aren't messing around. Like Shuda said, this is great. This is, you know, this is a legal case. This isn't a civil case. They are talking about fraud in the highest order here. This is, you know, conspiracy to fraud. It's a very, very serious charge, and it goes up to the highest realms of Facebook itself. But we see it all the time. Like, you spend any time on a Facebook platform and you'll get a scam Martin Lewis advert telling you, you know, he's become... Why is it? Because he is, he's reputable, and the man knows his finances. God knows how much he saved us all on discount cards and credit cards over the years. But they just, like, he in particular is a really interesting case, and that's being mirrored in Sweden with their journalists. It's, the amount of money they make off it, that they know they're making off it and openly encourage making off it. I just think brands and agencies should be really, really considering their budgets for next year and where that spend is going.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I wonder if what's the name of the group? It's Utkivana. Not sure I pronounced that.
It's very good.
Okay. Try sound credible. But I'm convinced that they obviously know that there's not going to be a real clear legal outcome from this attempt to sue Zuckerberg. But what it does do is certainly influence public opinion, which in turn influences EU policymakers. I think it also sends up a flare to other publishers in other markets who might feel inclined to follow suit. And that's quite interesting. It's a new playbook, effectively, and quite game-changing.
Yeah, I agree totally, and I hope it does lead the way. And this company's making more of fraudulent ads than most of the news industry across Europe makes in a year on genuine, proper advertising. So you'd hope it. Yeah, I like that. The analogy of the flare being thrown up and the bat signal to court being taken on by European publishers. It's like take them down.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it would be great to see other publishers following suit.
Agreed. Yeah.
It's good to see them stand up for themselves, definitely.
Yeah, I'm going to go and make my placard right now.
Yeah, we expect to see you in Sweden then.
Yes.
So let's move on to the next story now, looking at the retail sector. AI is reshaping consumer habits as people turn to tools like ChatGPT to help with their shopping. Adobe reported an 830% year-over-year increase in AI-driven traffic to retail sites during early November. Adobe's data also reports that conversion rates are 30% higher for those using AI to shop than for those who arrive via traditional search. Over 30% of those surveyed reported already having used AI for online shopping, and almost half plan to use it for their Christmas shopping this year. Shula, what do you make of these figures?
I think we're seeing a shift in consumer behaviour. It's as simple as that. It's really interesting because in my 30 years in the industry, it's curious because media and advertising agencies have always tried to find a way to simulate word of mouth, which is what consumers find as the most trustworthy touch point when it comes to making a purchase. That happens over and over again. And what Gen AI is doing here is it's serving that role of word of mouth by doing the research for you. So it's really fascinating to see.
It's transforming everything. John, what do you think?
I'm not surprised by the figure. Like, I know 830% looks huge on paper, but we are going from a base of zero from a couple of years ago. So it's not a massive surprise that the percentages are up that high. The interest and the meat in the story, it's like you said, it's the conversion rates for a start. Like, that's impressive. And it's the complete change in consumer behavior. We were talking about it in the office yesterday regarding what ads in chatbots and LLMs will be able to do for the industry. And one of the things I was thinking was about that word of mouth sweet spot. Basically, there is intent already because you're asking it to tell you what product you should have that day. And the response is, this one would be amazing. And if that's a sponsored result, then it still has the same effect. It feels like word of mouth. It feels like you're consulting a person, even though you aren't. It's just consumers are adapting to that, enjoying that personalization. And so, yeah, numbers of the growth doesn't surprise me at all. It's huge, but from a low base. But the conversion is impressive and opens up a lot of scope for advertisers, I think.
I was just going to expand. Ask you to expand on that for advertisers. What are the kind of opportunities there?
I think it depends. I've just finished reading a book called Supremacy by Palmi Olsen, which looks at the history of OpenAI, DeepMind, and how AI and conversational AI has risen. And it all started out very much, this is life-affirming, world-changing stuff, and then very quickly shifted to, we should open this up for advertisers. We need to be a profit organization. But that's coming. That's coming fast in the next year. All the platforms will be looking for ways to further monetize. They are all propped up, it seems, by the same number of private investment companies and a huge amount of capitals going into them. And they're going to have to find a way to pay that back. Basically, they need to pay the piper. So advertising is the natural step. But there's a lot to offer in it for brands as well. Like I say, that conversation aspect of it, the context, the intent, it's all very, you know, depends how they choose to do it. I think don't be intrusive would be a good start. Be smart with how you choose what your placements look like. But the market's there and it's where people are flocking for, like, I love, you know, we're in December now, as you can see from Dwayne, our Christmas tree on the table, and people will not be Googling presents for grandma. They will be in ChatGPT saying, what can I get my grandma for Christmas? And it'll be a more conversational approach. There's loads of options for advertisers. It just depends what the platforms, how they choose to make it look really for the industry, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
Some other interesting sort of early observations for me. I don't know if you guys remember the time when Google came out with that think piece around the messy middle. This effectively removes it. It's just gone. With the introduction of technology. So that's extraordinary and incredibly insightful when it comes to the path to purchase. The other interesting thing is noticing the categories where that perform best with this technology. So it's toys, it's video games, it's electronics. It's things that focus on functionality. What does it do? It's not which jeans am I going to look hottest in, for example. So I wonder if as nuance sort of develops over the coming years, whether we'll see there are categories that lend themselves more naturally to this AI-generated assisted search versus categories that require genuine discovery and exploration and browsing. And that's actually part of the pleasurable experience.
That's true. That's really interesting. Like in terms of those categories being popular at the moment and how that adapts, because you're right, it's, you know, it's like quick win categories and, you know, like buying toys for your kids, what did they like, if they like, I don't know, waffle dog, from the top of my head, that thing's easily done rather than the kind of pleasurable process of what jacket are you going to get for winter, what pair of jeans are you going to have that consumers might still want a little bit more of their own time invested in. No, really interesting.
Yeah, something that they'd enjoy going shopping for.
Yeah. But no, I think Shula was dead on in the first line. Like it is a shift in consumer behaviour that is going to be massive over the next year and beyond.
Yeah. And on that note, what do you think it could like look like within a year? What could those figures look like?
Larger.
Larger. Better conversion rates. Yep. It'd be interesting to understand how we measure success with clients. Mm-hmm. We definitely talk a lot with our clients about the importance of qualified traffic. Well, this is 100% qualified traffic, so that's extraordinary. To your point, it's about AIO. So optimizing, you know, the models themselves as opposed to just search. We're continuing to learn, and I think we can't put off testing and learning as much as we can, because this is clearly an area that's accelerating at great speed and may become a make or break part of the marketing mix within 12 months.
Yeah, I mean, it must be in your position as well, you know, you're Chief Strategy Officer at the AND Partnership, and that's... It has to have an impact. Your day-to-day in terms of strategy and advising clients must be shifting.
It absolutely does. My focus is on the US, and there is a sense that adoption there is accelerating versus other markets. And yes, there is an almost daily need to consult and have conversations about how we can evolve our strategies in order to capture this rapidly expanding way of uncovering options for purchase.
Yeah,
that sounds interesting. So now moving on to our last story for today, we're going to be looking at the influencer landscape. And according to new data, influencers and content creators are becoming increasingly popular among older viewers. So research by Ampere Analysis reveals that 54% of 55 to 64 year olds in the US now watch influencer content every week, a figure which has risen by 10% since 2020. In the UK, the figure has risen from 30 to 38% in the same time frame. TikTok and YouTube are the principal drivers of growth in monthly active users. Ampers said that the growing ownership of CTV devices among older consumers is supporting the trend, with so many people now watching YouTube on TV. So what can we learn from these figures, Shula?
I'm so happy that we're finally talking about 50-plus-year-olds as a 50-plus-year-old. So it's interesting, as an industry, we're so desperate to overlook, you know, the 50-plus-year-olds in our constant pursuit of winning the next generation. And yet in the US alone, 55-plus-year-olds account for 40% of consumer spending. They are often overlooked, and to the detriment of many brands. We just need to course correct. And we need to recognize they're engaging. They're engaging more than younger audiences, so 40% higher engagement rates than younger generations. And between 67 to 70% of Gen X and boomers have said they've made a purchase decision based upon influencer content. So maybe this is the time for us to take the older generation a little more seriously.
Yeah. I mean, it's a huge portion of society. It's silly for advertisers to kind of just focus on like Gen Z or anything, which, yeah, a lot of them do, which they're missing out on a huge opportunity there. Yeah. John, what do you think?
I mean, it's, I can echo what Shula's saying. I've said this for a while, that it is not just cutting off a swathe of the potential audience. It's the audience that has the money. The younger generations don't have pennies and might never have pennies. And like the older people have more disposable income than brands ever give them credit or targeting for, basically. It should be of no surprise to anyone. It's like, oh no, shock horror, 55-year-olds plus are engaging with content. Like, that's no age. And of course they are. The digital enjoyment, like being on these platforms, it's like content is out there for them, and it will, I think, more and more so be dedicated to finding them. They have longer attention spans. They will kind of stick with this content. They will engage with it. They will comment more than younger people will. It is easier than catching the 1 second attention of millennial beyond millennial. It is, I don't know, I think it's been ignored for a long time by the industry that there is an affluent consumer base waiting for them, and that they should be providing content for them as well. It's it's nice to see something like this being borne out in statistics. And great that channels are being adopted in this way.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think to build on that, I think TWI data tells us that only 15% of older consumers feel that they're represented in advertising. So what we've described about us, our bad habits as an industry, is clearly translating into their perception of how they are represented. And let's not forget, the West as a whole is aging. So we can either all continue to chase a shrinking younger demographic, or we can reconfigure.
Yeah, definitely.
And it's like, it shouldn't be that we're still, you know, that there are still articles praising the one brand out there that put people over 40 or over 50 in their advertising. It's like, and that used to be a big deal in the industry. It's like, oh wow, they've done this. There was someone with grey hair advertising a beauty product, It's not that way. Like you say, it's an aging population, and it is a large swathe of a population, and should be catered for. And 15% feel that they aren't, which is wild.
I'd love to offer, it's a bit of a closed circle, just a couple of anecdotes of the sort of advertising I'm getting on Meta.
Oh, good.
As a 50-plus-year-old, not quite fraudulent.
Oh, God, do share.
Incontinence pads. Funeral services, and my particular favourite is a special type of soap that's designed to get rid of old people's smell.
What?
That traditional soaps can't do. And I think the ad opens up with you know that disgusting smell when you walk into an old people's That's you. So, please, can we get a grip?
That's amazing. That's, I mean, that's what happens when you put your target audience into the Meta AI content box, and that's the shite it's going to spit out for people of a certain age and demographic.
Yeah. That's a case in point. As well, that's really shocking, that last one.
Sure, but you know, I bookmarked it for 20 years time when I might start having a strange.
You know what you know what's going to be in your Christmas stocking this year, Sherwin? Oh God, that's dreadful. Absolutely terrible.
Wow, thanks for sharing those. Some interesting, very interesting anecdotes there.
No, I think, you know, as an industry, we are like by nature put demographics in boxes. Like ages have cutoffs. This is what happens. I've talked about this on the podcast this year. The moment, you know, I turned 40 this year, and it's almost like the moment you turn 40, it shifts from kind of Urban Outfitters advertising to Marks and Spencer's advertising. They assume that on my 40th birthday, I started dressing differently. Fine, I don't mind that. I probably did, not directly at 40, but as you get older, it changes. But it's this ignoring of a vast swathe of the population and then all giving them incredible crap like that that needs to change. So the industry has a lot to think about.
Yeah, definitely. So going back to the influencer side of it, what are the biggest opportunities here for advertisers?
my perspective would be we're talking about an audience that is more choiceful and more intentional about the influencer content they consume. They engage more. They don't necessarily spend as much time. I would advocate forging longer term strategic partnerships with the right influencers and just driving that trust and building that authenticity over time versus a micro influencer campaign where we're trying to seed something. I think for the older generation, it's more about a longer term association with the right influencer.
Yeah, those long-standing partnerships can be really effective. John, what do you think?
Yeah, agree completely. It's not about pandering to a demographic. It's just about providing an inclusive outlook for your entire potential customer base. And there's so much opportunity now to do that. It doesn't have to be David Attenborough dancing on TikTok. It's not that on the nose, but it can be an awful lot of kind of, there's a lot of ways to do it and to kind of show that you have a long-term investment. We hear so much now about the importance of not scale, but of community and audience and engagement. And if you want to foster that, then find your target audience and create the content that they need. There's a lot to do.
Yeah. There was some research released recently by Billion Dollar Boy talking about virtual influencers and how that's becoming much more popular. How do you think that could be used with that generation in an effective way?
I would like to see the data behind popular.
Yeah.
Feels like, I think virtual influencers have been around for quite a while. Mm-hmm. I certainly know that Tommy Hilfiger experimented with them, just drawing off the top of my head, about 7 years ago, they were already starting to experiment with this notion of virtual influencers. I'm not sure I buy the stat in the first place about this increase in popularity, I'll be honest. I'm picking up from the research that we're looking at that there's people are looking for more of an antidote to the algorithm. They're looking for more authenticity, more human connections. So I don't know what you think.
Yeah, I agree. Honestly, it's interesting, and it's the virtual influencer thing is a novelty. And I mean, there's been some really high profile, terrible attempts at it over 2025. The Wimbledon one always sticks in my mind. Mia Zelu, the tennis going influencer that had two kneecaps on each knee, and and people did go for it. People thought for a second, who is this character? And then you look very basic photo, and it's obvious. I still think audiences are savvy to that kind of stuff, and I'm not sure. Yeah, popular is a word that I'm interested in there. Obviously, it's going to rise because it's an easy thing to do. The programs are developing and getting better and better day by day, and it will get harder and harder to discern. But at the moment, I think, I'm not sure if that's the way to go. If you're talking about building community and authenticity, using the least authentic thing possible to do it, it seems like a backward step to me. but these things tend to take off. So see how it goes.
Yeah, we'll see. People definitely are craving more authenticity at the moment.
Yeah.
With like the AI slop going on and stuff. So
yeah, it's interesting that notion of authenticity around and then throwing virtual influence into the mix. Yeah. It doesn't work, but maybe it will when it's, you know, as it accelerates.
Yeah, we'll have to see what things look like in 10 years.
Yeah, oh God.
Yeah.
I dread to think, honestly, it's hard enough doing predictions for 2026, never mind imagining 10 years down the line.
I dread to think what advertising I'll be served in 10 years' time.
You'll be a decade into your journey towards the old person soap at that point. So. You'll smell great.
Well, that's a good note to finish on, I think. Sheila, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me.
Thanks for all your insights. And John, thanks for joining, as always.
Thank you very much. I've postponed my meta-related nervous breakdown for a week. Thank you.
Great. Thanks to all our listeners. That was today's Mad Tech Podcast. Tune in next week.
You've been listening to the Mad Tech Podcast, brought to you by Exchange Wire.